I didn't mean to frighten the children. I just thought Santa Claus wasn't real. That was all.
David, Santa Claus is real. Okay. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another Hoops HD report, recording here live on December 21st, Monday evening. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by part of our normal cast, our colleague Joby Fortson, not being able to join us tonight, but we do want to send congratulations out to him on the birth of his daughter. So, Joby, when you're watching, congratulations to you and your family. Best wishes. Let me start by introducing who is here. Starting with John Tytel. John, how are you?
Good. I'm not sure if Santa Claus is for real, but Monmouth is for real.
Monmouth is for real, and they've been doing a few new bench celebrations broke out, including the Star Wars one and the. And there was a couple others, I think a Santa reindeer sleigh one, which is pretty good. But also joining us, John Salika. John, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing quite well. We want to send our congratulations to Joby and his family. And I don't think we ever congratulated Galen and his wife and daughter yet either. So congratulations out to them in Hoosier Land.
And we have something a little different tonight. We're so used to seeing David Griggs sitting on his couch and... David, you're something a little bit different there. It looks like you've got a bed that was destroyed there behind you. How are you tonight?
It's a long story. As you said before we went on the air, you said it would be best not to talk about it. It looks like we lost Stalika. I mean, he just doesn't know what to... All right. But anyway, it's December.
Okay, well, you could all try to just figure that one out for yourselves, but we will try to get John S. back with us in a second here, but we do want to get into the program here. We've got a big career, slated stuff to go over tonight. We've got some news and notes to begin with. We've been focusing in on two conferences every week. Tonight we're going to focus in on the SEC and the Big 12. We are going to review some of the other conferences and preview some of the upcoming games for this week, but let's start with something that happened in the middle of last week, and that was Wisconsin head coach Bo Ryan announcing his retirement. Had a heck of a career, both at the D1 level and at lower levels. And welcome back to John S. But David, and your thoughts on Bo Ryan's retirement here and his career?
Well, he had a fantastic career. I kind of hate to see him go. He really was good for the game. In a game that doesn't have as many good guys as it should, he was definitely one of the good guys. Four national championships, all at the D3 level. Unfortunately, I kind of think that he won't be valued as much. His legacy won't be valued as much as it should be because he never did win at all. It seems like unless you win a national title, you're not considered a great coach, but he certainly was. I definitely think he belongs in the Hall of Fame, not just for what he did at Wisconsin, but what he did at the D3 level. And the other thing about Wisconsin, most people don't remember, they were good on occasion, but they weren't a solid front runner. Like, Bo Ryan had them to the point of where they were always in the NCAA tournament. They were often a protected seed. Certainly, they were never as good, at least not that I recall, before he got there as they were after he got there. And so,
there was the Bennett era before him.
There was, like, Dick Bennett did go to a Final Four, but wasn't that kind of an anomaly? Like, Whiskey wasn't a tournament regular before Bo Ryan.
They were out of the tournament for, what, 30, 40 years before Dick Bennett came aboard?
I would call that not a regular.
John T., looking back at Bo Ryan's career, do you think he's deserving of Hall of Fame consideration or not because he didn't really have most of his success, as much success at the D1 level with the national championships?
So you answered your own question. If the focus is on the D1 level, then he is in no way a Hall of Famer. If you take the total body of work, I think he is. We have to send out birthday greetings. I believe he turned 68 yesterday, actually. 352 wins at Wisconsin-Platteville as head coach. Won four national titles in a 9-year span. I mean, the guy owned Division III. Set a scoring record on defense in 97. His team only allowed 47.5 points a game. Insane numbers. And he was the winningest men's basketball team of the 90s from any division. Then he comes to Wisconsin and goes 364 and 130. Obviously, thanks to the Arizona Wildcats, made back-to-back Final Fours over the past 2 years. And his 747 career wins, number 30 all-time, one ahead of some guy from Kansas named Fog Allen.
Well, let me ask you, though. Let's follow up on that. Do you think that he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame because of that, or do you think that the D3 should be ignored?
I personally think it should be considered in the totality of the circumstances and that it is enough to get him in. He was nominated today along with another Big Ten coach, Tom Izzo, who I think both also deserve to get in. But I would give that to Bo. I think his numbers speak for themselves regardless of division.
Okay. And John S., let me bring you back in here. There was some questions, I guess, with regard to the timing of Bo Ryan's departure. First, because of the question of should he have retired after the Final Four last year if he was going to go out anyhow. And then the question of maybe there was a little bit of gamesmanship on his behalf here because he wanted Greg Gard to take over as his successor, and the administration there at Wisconsin really didn't want Gard, but by doing this, they're kind of forced to have him for the rest of this season. Do you agree with that? Do you think that was part of the timing here? Or do you think it was just that this was when he thought that it was time to hang it up?
I think if it were up to Bo Ryan, he would have left after the title run from last year. But my understanding is there was also some complications as it related to Greg Gard's father, who I think was having some health issues over the spring and the summer and actually wound up passing away. It was either September or October, so the timing wouldn't have been right to give the reins to Greg Gard at that point. So Bo Ryan, I guess you could say a little reluctantly, decided to stay on as head coach for a little bit longer. And I guess now that Gard appears to be ready, Ryan is able to hang up the reins full time now.
Well, David, do you think that this was also, though, kind of trying to force Gard down the throats of Wisconsin? And I guess the bigger other question is, do you think he's just going to be interim for this year, or do you think they're going to sign him on long term?
I think it depends entirely on how Whiskey finishes the year. I think to say that Gard was forced down their throats is overstating it. I do think Gard would have been a candidate that they considered. I just think that they would have gone through the whole interview process. Wisconsin, it's a very prestigious job. It would have attracted a lot of candidates. I mean, we're talking people like Archie Miller, maybe Chris Mack, maybe some people that have been successful already, and maybe even some people that are already at other Power 5 schools. Wisconsin is a very, very good job, and I think that they would have been able to put together a very strong pool of candidates, and I don't think Barry Alvarez was saying that they wouldn't go with Gard. I think he was just saying that they're going to consider him, but they're not going to just give it to him. This, I think, gives him a really good chance. If Wisconsin, if they finish strong, I think Gard will get the job. I'd kind of like to see him get it. As far as forcing it down the throat, I just think that had Bo Ryan retired at the end of last year, they would have gone through the interview process rather than just naming a successor.
Well, one thing that we see a lot of coaches do is this associate head coach position or this head coach in waiting, and which they didn't do with Gard.
That has rarely worked. That was the thing for a while. I don't think that that's the way to go.
Well, a guy that does have that title over at SMU, to kind of segue here, is Tim, if I pronounce it correctly, Yankovic, who has been coaching SMU for the first 9 games. It went out to a 9-0 start. Larry Brown is back this week, though. John T., let me bring you in here. Should Larry Brown be even coming back, the way this team has played without him?
Yes, it's the Steve Kerr question. If Luke Walton goes undefeated for like a couple months, do you bring back the guy once he's ready? Obviously, there's a difference between a back injury and a suspension or whatever. But, no, I think Brown has earned his right. He did his time after doing the crime, arguably, so I'm ready for him to come back. Obviously, if he comes back and the team loses 9 after going 9-0, then I think there will be plenty of second-guessers. But they actually have a pretty decent schedule. I believe their next road game against the top 50 team is not until mid-February, so I think you can bring Larry right in, and I think he'll be able to do pretty well for the months ahead.
David, do you agree with that?
Yeah. I think so, but and again, Larry Brown, he's like buffalo wings and chili cheese fries. It looks amazing. It tastes so good when you're eating it. But when you're done, you want to know what the hell you did to yourself. I think that that's him. He tends to make grand exits when he leaves. And I don't know. Like, what are the long-term effects for SMU going to be? And are they going to continue to be relevant 3-4 years from now? I don't know. But, yeah, I agree. You got to bring him back. Why not?
Well, let's move right to the conferences that we want to hit, and we're going to start with we'll start over in the SEC, where Kentucky suffered a loss that I think shocked all of us. We thought that they would blow out Ohio State, especially the way Ohio State had been playing, and instead Ohio State wins this game on Saturday. And I guess the question as far as Kentucky goes is, are they not as good as we thought they were heading into the season? Let me start with you, John T.
They're not as good as we thought they were, just because we thought after going 38-0 and bringing in another top-ranked recruiting crop that Calipari would have his guys contending again. And it's only December. They have plenty of time to contend. But some of the stats are a little disconcerting, especially some of the freshmen. Jamal Murray was obviously amazing against the Buckeyes, 33 points, 7 of 9 from behind the arc. He is a legit top five prospect in next spring's draft. Well, who was really exposed were the other two frosh, super frosh, Isaiah Briscoe and Scalabissiere. Terrible shooting. A combined 5 points on 1 of 16 from the field. You're not going to beat anybody with that. Obviously, it's just one game, but they better get it in gear before conference play starts very shortly.
John S., the team that is now arguably, I guess, on top of the SEC, at least maybe not ranked higher than Kentucky, but sitting there at 10-0 and undefeated, is Frank Martin's South Carolina Gamecocks, coming up with a game against St. John's tomorrow night, I believe. I think that's actually out in Connecticut at the Mohegan Sun. But how good is this South Carolina team, and when do you think they are going to finally lose a game?
Well, they're probably not going to lose a game until SEC play comes about. I mean, winning a rivalry game is never quite easy, so they do get some points for beating Clemson on the road, even if the road is considered a neutral court in Greenville this year. But South Carolina also did rack up a few, I guess you could say, decent wins earlier at the Paradise Jam between Hofstra and Tulsa, but these are not household names.
They're not, but they are decent teams. I don't think South Carolina is one of the 20 best teams, but I do think that they're a solid NCAA tournament team, and they have won all their games, and although that those aren't brand names, I mean, Tulsa's at least decent. Clemson isn't great, but it's tough to go on the road and beat them. I mean, I think that they've done a lot of decent things, but they don't have that one win or one game that blows you away. I just wanted to follow up real quick on something Tytel said. Some of the stats were alarming. Listen to this stat. This is rather alarming. Points. They were outscored 74-67 by Ohio State.
That's always a pretty important stat in most games, I think.
Yeah. In Ohio State, barely 500. I don't know, I'm a little surprised you didn't spin. Were you more surprised at how well Ohio State played or at how poorly Kentucky played? Because both were shocking. I just couldn't believe what I was looking at the whole game. Like, this is a team that got absolutely thrashed by UConn last week, and that hadn't looked good at any point this season prior to yesterday.
Well, I'll tell you who impressed me was Jay Sean Tate. Just had an amazing game. He was out of his mind down the stretch there for Ohio State, and this is something that, when going into the season, at least for me personally, I looked at this Ohio State team as a big question mark in the Big Ten, really, because they were so young, and you didn't know when these kids would start to gel, and you know, this could be the game that gels them together for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it could be.
Or they could go out and lose their next game badly, for all I know.
They probably will.
Which is at home to Mercer coming up tomorrow night, so we'll keep an eye on that.
Probably lose badly.
But let me bring John T. back in here on this Vanderbilt team. We've kind of sliding almost under the radar here. We looked like them a lot heading into the season. They've kind of underperformed. A huge game tomorrow night at home with Actually, I think they're on the road for Purdue. But a huge game either way tomorrow night at Purdue. And a Purdue team that's coming off of a loss, their first loss of the season. How important of a game do you think this Purdue game is tomorrow night for this Vanderbilt team?
I mean, it's important because it's a great Purdue team, and a road win against a top 20 team is going to make a big difference in March in terms of a seed line here or there. That being said, I think that their 7-point loss to Kansas also looks pretty good, and as well as the close losses by single digits to Baylor and Dayton. They've been in every single game. However, top 100 wins are not that great. Stony Brook in overtime at home, I mean, eh. And even though they're losing to good teams by close margins, this is the kind of game they need to win to prove that they do belong as a legitimate top 10, top 20 team in the country.
And I agree with that. And I think that sometimes you get too caught up in good losses. At the end of the day, I think when you play a really good team tough and don't beat them, it's an indication that you're good. But at the end of the day, you need the paper. You need the meat. You can't just come to the committee with a bunch of games that you almost won. They need some wins like this. And if they don't get this win tomorrow, they'll get other chances. I don't want to say that it's do or die, but there is a little bit of urgency here for Vandy, I think.
Well, another team that really could use one of these top wins is this Florida Gators team. They also only have three losses, and they were to Purdue, Michigan State, and Miami. But John S., what do you think about this Florida team? Is this a team that you think is going to be able to put up the numbers and get into the NCAA tournament discussion or not here?
I think the potential is there, but they're going to have to get the meat of their work in SEC play now. I mean, they did beat St. Joe's, which is starting to look a little bit better and better as the season goes. But being able to beat either Purdue or some of the other teams that you mentioned, those are teams you're going to have to beat if you not only want to get into the NCAA tournament, but also make a significant run like their fans have become accustomed to in recent years.
Well, David, I don't know if this Florida team is good enough to make an NCAA tournament run, but they do have two interesting non-conference games left. Florida State coming up on December 29th, a big rivalry game there, and they also get West Virginia in the Big 12 SEC Challenge at the end of January. Yeah, also at home, both those games being a home game.
Yeah, because there's nothing you want to see more at the end of January than a conference challenge. Yeah, Florida State, it's odd that this would – the timing of this is odd. They normally liked to schedule it early in the year when the students were on campus because it generated a lot of buzz around both basketball programs. They used to play it, remember, a few years the night before the game, the football game. And, God, what a circus, because you'd get all these people in there that were tailgating for the football game, and it was a show. That is big. I think Florida State is looking a little bit better. They just keep getting better and better. It is at home at Florida, but is it going to be the same without the raucous students there? I don't know, but that's a big game. I think that's big for both teams coming up next week.
Fair enough. John T., a team that really impressed me this past weekend was Texas A&M. They absolutely crushed Baylor, I thought. And if somebody's going to be able to beat Kentucky in the SEC this year and take the crown, do you think it's this A&M team?
They absolutely crushed Baylor, you thought. What a brilliant assessment. I think they did, too.
I think they did, yeah.
Well. I think they did. That's
I'm
some
just making it up, David. Come on, give me a break.
Uncertain. I'm a little concerned that their only true road game so far was at the Curtain of Distraction and resulted in a 13-point loss. They have not proven that they are anything but a hometown hero at the moment, and they have a nice cupcake or two coming up with Cal Poly to finish up. They have a 10-day break before hosting Cal Poly, then they go to host Arkansas, so a nice easy segue into conference play. I don't think they can hang with Kentucky, frankly. Decent team, young team, but I don't think they're at that level of the Wildcats.
They weren't road games, but beating Texas and Gonzaga is still going to carry some weight with the committee for the Aggies.
Yep.
Well, those were true neutral games at least. But, John S., let me stick with you. This Alabama team, which as we record this right now, they're actually up a couple points on Oregon. I argued last week that I think Avery Johnson has done one of the most impressive jobs in the entire country so far here at Alabama. Do you agree with me on that?
So far, I would agree with you. And he's also taken a page out of Frank Martin's book over at South Carolina by getting a nice win on the road, or neutral court road win over at Clemson. But even outside of the Xavier and the Dayton games, Alabama has looked pretty decent on their own, even though one of those wins was a shorthanded win over Wichita. Their win over Notre Dame would not be considered a shorthanded team.
No, it wouldn't. And it's just part of the coaching is just how much they've improved as the season has gone along. I mean, early against Kennesaw, yeah, they weren't that good. They got their doors blown off by Dayton. I mean, they looked awful. They don't look awful anymore, and they've lost one of their better players for the season, and they're still gelling. I had a lot of question marks about them coming into the year because Avery Johnson not coaching at the college level. I know he coached at the NBA level, but it's not the same. College coaching is more teaching and developing and building. At the NBA, I think it's more managing. The skill sets are different, but he has done phenomenally well. I agree with Chad. I don't know if they'll make the tournament or not, but I didn't think they'd be this good. It wouldn't have shocked me had they failed to win 10 games all year. Yet here they are, getting the kinds of wins that'll get them in the discussion.
Well, let me ask you. Auburn fans have to be pretty terrified right now that Alabama may beat them to the punch to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
That was a question I was just about to ask David. What do you think Auburn fans will feel like if Bruce Pearl in 2 years can't make the tournament and Avery Johnson does it 1 year with the Tide?
Jealous, angry, but I don't think they're going to blame Bruce Pearl. I mean, Auburn was awful before he took them over. They had a much further way to go before, you know, than Alabama did. Alabama would at least make the NIT occasionally. Auburn was just pitiful.
Well, John T., let me bring you in here on probably the biggest question that we have when we look at the SEC this season, and that is, what the hell is wrong with LSU?
How much time you got? It's been Ben Simmons good, everyone else less good. This is a team that trailed Charleston 39-17 at halftime. The offense is amazing, 85.5 points a game, so... Shocker, the problem must be defense. They allow almost 79 points a game. They don't even make 65% of their free throws. There is a silver lining. Senior shooting guard Keith Hornsby is back from sports hernia surgery and is averaging 20 points a game in his 3 games back. So there is some hope on the horizon. But, yeah, they have been very underwhelming. And I really came like this close to putting them in my preseason Elite Eight, and thank God I didn't.
This team sitting here at 6-4 with losses to Houston and College of Charleston to an NC State team, NC State and Marquette, their other losses. These are not teams that we're talking about as being NCAA tournament locks by any means.
They did have the big win against McNeese State, big in-state rivalry okay. There.
All right. Well, we will give them credit for that. They've got a
McNeese State's next win will be their first, by the way. Okay, wow. Their wins, McNeese State 0-6, Kennesaw with 2 wins, South Alabama with 2 wins. They've actually beaten North Florida. They have a winning record. No, their wins are horrible. This is just horrible. They should just quit, maybe start over. If they were playing Nintendo, they would have just hit the reset button.
Well, a team that's actually off to a surprising start that we really haven't discussed at all so far this year is Ole Miss, sitting here at 9-2. And it's kind of a question we asked about a few teams last week, so let's start this question this week. John S., let me start with you. Ole Miss, fraud or for real?
Well, they took a step in the right direction, getting a win against one of their cross-state rivals against Memphis, but they've still got a little bit of work to do before I can put them back in the NCAA field, but I'm not quite ready to call him a fraud yet.
John T., do you agree with him?
Fraud.
Thank you.
I like the 6-point road win at Memphis. That means that they are worthy of consideration, and schedule sets up nicely. They host Troy tomorrow, then 11 days to prepare for a little trip to Lexington, which I don't think is going to go well, but it's nice to have a cupcake and some time, so maybe. But they're not going to win.
Remember, they almost beat Kentucky last year. That was one of the better games of the SEC season. So
yeah, but they also got in last year. So, okay.
No, we also have the new on-campus arena that's going to be opening up pretty soon.
I could see them landing somewhere around the bubble. I mean, they do have the win at Memphis, which is decent but not great. They don't have any really bad losses. So I could see them landing on the bubble because, again, it's just I think that they can – if they – you know, they have Alabama, Georgia at home. If they get both of those, they should win at UC at LSU. I think that they're – if they can win – 3 or 4 road games in the conference and take care of business at home, I think they'll have a chance.
Now, another team we kind of like, I kind of thought might have a chance to surprise this season was Mississippi State. They've been wrecked by injuries, really. But two other teams that are sitting here with decent at least power ratings so far are this Tennessee team and Georgia. John T., is there anything you see from either one of those teams that makes you believe that they may have a shot to make a run during SEC play and get themselves into consideration?
As the Vols have lost 4 of 5, that is a big fraud to them. For Georgia, there's a chance. They have 3 losses to top 100 teams by a combined 11 points, so they can hang with the big boys. They host Clemson on Tuesday. Unfortunately, Clemson's coming off a home loss against the Angry Frank, so I think they're going to be in a bad mood, maybe angrier Frank. But if they can beat Clemson, I might believe it, but I think it's going to be a tall order.
I think Georgia will continue to improve, and that's more of a gut feeling than anything. At no point have they looked like a solid tournament team, but I'm just reminded of what they did last year. They got off to a real sluggish start and then pulled some wins in conference to get them in the picture. I think they go to the round of 64. But, again, that's me guessing that they're going to improve because they sure as hell haven't shown it yet.
Well, David, let me ask one more question to you.
Yes.
Who's the worst team in the SEC, Arkansas or Missouri?
Oh, Missouri.
Okay. let's follow up on that with how many bids do you think the SEC does end up getting at the end of the day? Based on what you've seen so far, from kind of a snapshot from where we are now.
I do think South Carolina is going to get in. I don't think that they're going to remain undefeated. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that they're going to drop a game here and there. I like Vanderbilt. I like Kentucky. And I think they get at least 1 and maybe 2 more. So I'm going to go between 4 and 5. The way Alabama's playing, they might get in. I mean, they've looked good enough out of conference. I think they'll be able to defend their home court and at least beat the sub-NCAA teams on the road. Alabama might get in.
John S., do you agree that 4 to 5 is what we're looking at here, or do you think we can get more?
I think 5 is a reasonable number because I think the Kentucky, Vanderbilt, and Texas A&M have the best chance to get in.
Yeah.
I would also give, South Carolina and who else? Alabama is the current leaders to get number 4 and 5, but I could see Florida or either Ole Miss possibly getting enough wins in SEC play to get in the discussion.
And John T., your thoughts?
I'm setting the over-under at 4. I think Kentucky and Vandy are slam dunks. I think at least one of South Carolina or Florida will make it. Maybe a Texas A&M or Mississippi. I really hate the rain on the Alabama parade, but, like, I'm not seeing it. They lost to Dayton and Xavier by a combined 51 points. They beat Southern Miss by 3. This is not a great tournament team, guys. I'm sorry.
It's not a great, but I will say this out there. As we're recording this right now, Alabama's up 10 on Oregon with about 3 minutes left in the first half. If they can pull out this win, that becomes another really nice mark on their resume.
Great thing about their conference is they don't have to go north of the Ohio River to play anybody, so you don't have to worry about it.
When I say that I think they can get in, even if they don't, they're way better than I expected them to be. I thought they were going to be god-awful, and they're not. I mean, I thought that they would be as bad as LSU currently is or worse.
Well, let's move on over to the Big 12. And, John T., I'll let you start things off here because you called it heading into – you and Joby both called it heading into the season. Oklahoma looking, in my opinion at least, national championship type of good so far this season. Your thoughts on what you've seen from them?
I mean, the three-point shooting is one of, if not the best in the nation. The scoring margin of about 25 a game means that they're dominating everyone. They're a little top-heavy. I believe their top 4 scorers take over 2/3 of their team shots. So I could easily see if somebody gets in foul trouble or gets hurt or is having a cold night, then that's so much pressure on the other top three or four guys to play well. Buddy Hield is capable of leading this team and scoring 30 a night because he's been doing that. I didn't think their defense was going to be as good. They're top 50 in the nation, only 64.5 points a game allowed. The big test comes in early January. Host Cyclones at the Jayhawks in a three-day span. So we'll see if they are championship caliber.
Another team that they could be facing in a couple days here is the Giant Killers, Northern Iowa. It's a potential second-round matchup for them, and they're heading out to the Diamond Head Classic this week. John S., Northern Iowa knocks off Iowa State this week. How surprised were you about this win? Or were you surprised about it?
I'm not terribly surprised because this is another one of those rivalry games. And Northern Iowa, even though we thought they were going to be reloading, but Wes Washburn is going to be one of the under-the-radar players that we'll probably be hearing about come March. But still, I thought Iowa State would have their first loss when they went to Cincinnati, but I guess they weren't able to get by Northern Iowa like I thought they might.
David, are we overrating this? Did we overrate this Iowa State team?
I don't think we overrated what their ceiling is, but we've definitely overrated how they've played so far. Because they haven't really beaten anyone of note that indicates that they're a top 10 team yet. I don't think the Northern Iowa loss, other than bruising their ego a little bit, is really going to hurt them that bad. Northern Iowa has owned the Big Four for the last several years, by the way, and maybe even longer than that. They've had some good teams outside of that, but, I mean, Northern Iowa has won more of their share of these games. I don't think it's ultimately going to hurt them that bad, but I think they can be as good as anybody else. I think they can be top 10 good, but they really haven't shown it yet. Looking at their profile here, they did blow past Illinois. I think they did. No, they really didn't. But they haven't. Yeah, at no point really have they looked like a top 10 team.
Well, John T., we spoke Oklahoma. We think we heard that Iowa State may not be as good as we thought. Does Kansas win the Big 12 again this year? Is it Oklahoma or is it somebody else?
We're going to find out soon because Kansas hosts Oklahoma on January 4th, and if they can beat them, then I think that they will win the conference. But I've been rolling on the Sooner, on the Boomer Sooner, so I like Lon Kruger's chances. The thing that I don't get, they bring in Chake Diallo and Carlton Bragg, who are these like hotshot high school All-America guys. Neither of them is averaging more than 12 minutes a game. I understand that because you're top-heavy with Seldon and Ellis and everyone else, but like, you have all this talent. Use it. Help your team win more.
Yeah, if you look at Diallo, he played only 7 minutes in the Harvard game, only 7 minutes in the Oregon State game. Where is this guy that we were screaming about that he needs to get into these games?
Good question. Maybe there's like some he's eligible.
Part of the waiver was that he couldn't play more than 15 minutes a game prior to conference play.
Now I will say that he got into foul trouble. He actually fouled out. He only played 10 minutes against Montana and fouled out of the game. So
that's
was
a foul every 2 minutes, man. That
was pretty bad, honestly.
That is some foul front production there.
Maybe he needed some time to brush up on the new rules on officiating.
Yeah.
John S., West Virginia picked up another win tonight, beat up on a pretty weak Eastern Kentucky team. Great record, lousy schedule. Is this team really any good, or is it just I guess we'll do the fraud or for real question here. John S.
F for fraud right now, but again, they'll have their chances in the Big 12, but they were supposed to be tested in Las Vegas against, Cal, San Diego State, and Richmond, but they didn't really get much of a test out there.
For the first 18 minutes against Virginia, they looked amazing. Anyway, okay. Unfortunately, it was the wrong 18 minutes.
So you agree with him with fraud?
I think they're a fraud. Well, okay, I think they're a fraud in the sense that they're a protected seed caliber good, but I still think that they're a really good team. I mean, James Madison isn't terrible. Richmond isn't terrible. San Diego State isn't terrible. I mean, it isn't like they've played Louisville's schedule. They've actually played a couple of good teams and done reasonably well. But I don't think I don't think that they're as good as, you know, Kansas, Oklahoma, Iowa State, the other teams at the top of the league.
Well, if we stick on this fraud question, John T., how about this Baylor team? 0-2 away from home. Everything else has come on their home court.
Smells like a fraud, doesn't it? I love Rico Gathers. He's a great rebounder. I don't have a problem with a 7-point loss at Oregon in mid-November, even regardless of how the Ducks do tonight against Alabama. However, I understand Texas A&M is a good team. I didn't think they had a good defense. Baylor only shot 35.6% from the field against Texas A&M, whose defense is actually decent. Like, that's a problem. I still think they're going to get a bid, but a couple stumbled early.
Well, another team that's John S., let me bring you in here. Another team that looks like they are going to get a bid now, at least from what we've seen so far, is this Texas team with the North Carolina win, although really struggled on the road against a pretty weak Stanford team. How good do you think Shaka's team is here?
Well, they're certainly going to be a lot better than Shaka's old team over at VCU, but at least Texas did find a way to win that game, which was something they were not able to do against Stanford last year, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think this was a lot better Stanford team last year, too, though. But, David, beyond Texas, we've got Texas Tech, Kansas State, Oklahoma State. Do any of these three teams have a realistic chance this year?
I guess
that's funny.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I kind of like this Kansas State team. I think Bruce Weber's done fairly decently. You can laugh again. They were right in there with North Carolina. That was one of their losses, and they didn't play badly against Texas A&M. They got the win at Georgia. When I say that I thought this team was going to be absolutely pathetic, now I think that there's actually some substance there. I'm more impressed with them than I am with anybody else. I know you love this Texas Tech team. You had them going to the Sweet 16.
Now let me defend it. Now Texas Tech. What I've always said about Texas Tech so far is that I think they deserve consideration. If you're taking a snapshot right now, because they are 8-1, their loss was to a pretty good Utah team. They had a very nice win over what we thought was a pretty good South Dakota State team at home. It's not going to be something that people really look at, but I do like the South Dakota State team. Hosting Little Rock tomorrow night, a real interesting game.
Real interesting game between two teams that is a big game. If they win that one, I'll sit up and notice.
But, John T., do you agree about either Kansas State or Texas Tech at least deserving consideration?
I mean, the Red Raiders are 8-1. Like, you have to consider them regardless of their schedule, which, as you said, has been underwhelming. The defense looks pretty impressive. They've not given up more than 74, I don't think, in any single game, which is that's defense wins championships, I hear, and that's the kind of defense that can get you into March.
Okay, I'll mark this down here. December 21st, Titel just said Texas Tech wins the championship.
Oh. It could be the fourth best team in the state of Texas. We'll see how it goes.
Chad's just trying to push them off. I mean, he's been talking about how great Texas Tech is all year. Now he's trying to pass them off.
John S., TCU, is there anything there this year? We have another last place team.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's a last-place team, but they don't have the bloated record that last year's team brought to the table. And even last year's team somehow found a way to manage at Ole Miss. But then again, who didn't win at Ole Miss? Charleston Southern, I think.
The one thing TCU has done, and I don't think they get enough credit for this because it's just overlooked, they've managed to put together a really tough conference schedule.
Well, speaking about that, they do play in this killer schedule here, the Big 12. But John T., do you think things need to improve here, or do you think Trent Johnson just kind of gets to keep coaching here because they know they're going to be in last place every year?
No, I think he's in a little trouble. He won 18 games last year, which was a very respectable winning record, but he has losing records his first two seasons. And if he dips back under 500, which it looks like he's going to do, especially in this monster of a conference, I think he's in trouble. He was at Stanford 4 years, gone. LSU 4 years and gone. Guess what? This is year number 4 at TCU. I predict gone.
Oh, my God. Would LSU like to have him back right about now?
Okay. Well, let's take a look at actually, the one question we didn't ask yet for the Big 12 is, how many teams do you think will make the big dance out of this conference? Is it 6? Is it 7? Is it less or more? John T., start with you.
I will set the over-under at 5. I think Oklahoma, Kansas, West Virginia, Iowa State are slam dunks. I think Baylor can right the ship and get in. As far as Texas Tech and Texas, they might squeeze in as the number 6 seed out of the Big 12, but I'm setting it at 5 because I don't think that's going to happen.
John S., are you at the 5 number, or are you higher or lower?
I think I'm willing to go with 6 here, with Oklahoma, Kansas is locks, Iowa State, West Virginia, Baylor would be the next tier. But I could see Texas or another surprise team getting bid number 6 out of there. Not stealing the bid out of the conference tournament, mind you, but doing just enough within their conference to warrant that 6th bid.
David?
I think it's 6. I think you have Iowa State, Oklahoma, Kansas, Baylor, West Virginia, and then you have kind of a cliff, and then you have Kansas State, TCU, and Texas Tech.
I would not be shocked to see us discussing 7 teams in this conference. And one of the reasons I'm saying that is really because of what I've seen in some of the other conferences here, especially some of the smaller conferences like that normally put 3 or 4 teams in, like the A-10 or the American, looking like 1 or 2 bid leagues this year. But we'll get there in a second. Let's turn over to the ACC, where
Big 12 teams, and he's got Texas Tech going all the way.
I think Texas Tech or Kansas State. Just kind of keep an eye on them both. Over the ACC, the other surprising big game over the weekend at Madison Square Garden, Utah tried to blow the game to Duke, but were unable to and somehow won it. Now, David, I know you're being a big Duke conspiracy theorist. What happened here that Duke did not pick up this miracle come from behind win? Weren't they supposed to?
I don't know how you can give Duke that many chances to beat you and not get beat. It was the one thing Utah did well was it was hilarious. Like, after shooting themselves in both feet multiple times, they did come up with huge defensive plays. What were some of the things that happened? There was a 10-second violation where there was no press. He was just walking up the court and took too long. Multiple turnovers, not getting the ball in, getting the ball in and then dribbling it off the foot right under the basket. I think that was at the end of the first or at the end of overtime. I don't know, but honestly, despite screw-up after screw-up, Utah was very, very solid on the defensive end, and I think that was the difference maker. That's what won them the game. Duke kept going inside inexplicably and could not score.
Well, John T., you being the Pac-12 guy, do you agree that it was just Utah's defense that got them the win here?
I can't explain it. I mean, Duke comes in as like this top 10 offense in the nation, and then they shoot under 30% from the field. I mean, it could have been a cold night or it could have been great defense. What I do know is that if you have Emil Jefferson injured and Marshall Plumlee fouling out and Grayson Allen shooting 3 of 18, you're not going to win much. The one silver lining, Luke Kennard, who I was kind of ready to chalk up to bust after having this great high school career where he had like almost 3,000 points, scored 24 in 27 minutes. I think he's now a legit contender for ACC Rookie of the Year, although obviously the guys at Florida State will have a lot to say about that.
Well, John S., the other big win that came – well, I guess there were 2 big wins out of the ACC this past week. Let's start with North Carolina. They beat this UCLA team that had been rolling with the wins over Kentucky and Gonzaga. And UNC finally getting a win away from home. How good do you think this Heels team is, following what you saw them do against UCLA?
Well, UNC also had a couple, I guess you could call them decent wins right now over Northwestern and Kansas State, but this will be the first significant win away from home by beating UCLA. But let's not forget they also had a win over Maryland at home back in November prior to Thanksgiving. So we'll see if the chemistry is still there and how they do once they go to ACC play this year.
So you're going to put the back in your Final Four?
I'm not.
Well, I have to think of four teams that I would pick ahead of Carolina right now, but safe to say they are not one of them.
They're not one of them. They're not one of David's either. David, how about Virginia after what they did to Villanova?
I like Virginia a lot. I've liked them all year long. I said when they lost to George Washington that I didn't think it was indicative of them having a bad year. If anything, I think it made them better and hardened them. They haven't really even had to sweat. They sweat out Ohio State, of all teams, a little bit. But other than that, they have just blown through the schedule. I like them a lot. Joby isn't as big on him as he was last year. I don't know why. I think they're the best team that I've seen out of this conference so far.
And they're currently Ken Pom's number one team in the country, by the way. But, John T., let me throw two other ACC teams at you that we haven't discussed as much this year. Both sitting here at 9-1, Pittsburgh and Miami. Should we be paying more attention to these two teams?
I would pay serious attention to Miami. I am a big fan of Jim Larrañaga in general and this team in particular. They won a Puerto Rico tournament by beating Utah and Butler, which both of those wins are looking amazing. Their only loss is by 1 point at home to a average to above average Northeastern team. I think they're going to be 11-1 entering January. Five of their top nine scorers are seniors. I love veteran leadership. And they make free throws, top 10 in the nation at 77%. I am on the Miami bandwagon.
But not on the Pitt bandwagon.
A decent team, and Jamie Dixon's a good coach, and losing to Purdue is nothing to shake a stick at. And they have a lot of home games coming up, so they could start 13-1, which is great. We'll see how they do on the road at Notre Dame and at Louisville.
John S., let's take a look over to the Big East here, and I got to ask you this question, being the Xavier guy. How long does this undefeated season last?
Well, I think it will last at least through one more game going to Wake Forest. It's not going to be easy. I mean, it is part of the Skip Prosser Classic, which is now going to be in its fifth installment, which has gone a game at Wake, a game at Xavier, and then an off year. But this game is going to be much better than I thought it would be at the beginning of the year with the Wake seem to be clicking right now. This is going to be their biggest non-conference home test in quite some time, but unfortunately for them, they're not going to have as many of the students as in town as you would have for a Duke, a Carolina, or even a Miami game they had a few years ago when the Canes were number two and the Deacons pulled off the upset.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Pick me. Call on me.
Okay, David, do you want to say something?
I really like this Xavier team. I think their next two games are two of their bigger tests.
The other one's at Villanova.
The other one's at Villanova. I like Xavier so much, it wouldn't shock me if they won both of them. I know that they haven't really had any wins of this caliber yet, but I think that they've shown that they're good enough to do it. You know, they have blown through their schedule, and they've blown by some pretty good teams. You know, Alabama, USC, Dayton blew them away. Cincinnati was never really close. Auburn, who's okay, they've just been blowing out teams that are decent. And when you blow out decent teams, I think it's an indication that you can beat good teams. And another thing about Xavier is just how they're balanced. It isn't that they have one or two really big strengths that they go to all the time. They're good all the way around. The only area where they're not really good, I think, is point guard. But even that is really good. Xavier is ranked sixth today. I don't think they're overrated. They have looked really good, and it would not shock me if they went out and they won at Wake Forest and at Villanova in their next two games.
Well, John T., another team that I kind of said this was a dark horse team heading this season. I think I got laughed at, but Seton Hall picked up a real nice home win over Wichita State this weekend. And although Wichita State's numbers are not that good, they did have Van Vliet. So, are you starting to pay attention to Seton Hall at all yet?
Sorry, all you Jersey fans, I'm not. But They're a solid team, and I think a bid in March is in the realm of possibility, which I would not have said a month ago after they were losing to Long Beach State on a neutral court. The schedule's been pretty average, but beating a healthy Wichita State team, even at home, even in overtime, they had this amazing comeback. I kind of turned it off in the first half because they were down double digits, and then they came all the way back. They have this great backcourt with Kadeem Carrington and Isaiah Whitehead, and it helps. I mean, you talk about the conspiracies in the New York, New Jersey area. It must be nice when the other team gets whistled for 31 fouls.
Well, it's a state of Jersey basketball between Seton Hall, Monmouth, NJIT, Princeton, and some other team that plays in Piscataway, but we'll go over
St. Peter's?
Yeah, St. Peter's. We're not talking Rutgers tonight. That's quite all right. Let's take a quick look over at the Big Ten. David, the big news out of the Big Ten tonight was Denzel Valentine out 2 to 3 weeks with a knee injury for the top-rated Michigan State Spartans here. Do you think that they're going to be able to get through this stretch where he's out without losing any games?
I don't. That first game at Iowa is going to be tough. I don't think they're going to have any trouble really with Minnesota or Illinois or Penn State or at home against Iowa. I think they're going to get through it just fine.
Okay.
They're going to miss him, and even if they do slip up, he's out 2 to 3 weeks. He will be back. If they do drop a game or two, and then they get him back, and then they start blowing through the schedule again and winning big games, the committee will take into account when he was gone. It's a setback. It's not anything other than that. I think they're going to be just fine.
And John S., another one of the big games this past weekend was the Purdue-Butler game. It was a game we really liked going into the weekend. Butler gets the win over Purdue and has Vanderbilt coming up tomorrow night. Do you still think this Butler team this Purdue team is one of the top 10 teams of the Big Ten, or do you take something away from this Butler loss?
Well, I'll speak for both Butler and Purdue here. I mean, Butler had control for a lot of that game that the final score doesn't indicate. But I still think Purdue is going to be sitting pretty, even though it's not going to be quite in the tier of Michigan State and Maryland. But I'll tell you one thing, if Valentine is out for the Iowa game, I think that's where the Spartans finally do lose their first game, because Iowa is one of those alligator pits that Griggs likes to talk about.
Yep.
Well, we kind of mentioned a little bit at the top of the show, but before it came on, actually, but John T., Indiana, huge come-from-behind win over Notre Dame. Has this team turned the corner, or is this just Notre Dame team just even worse than Indiana is?
I think you hit it on the head. Notre Dame is really hard to figure out for me. They are up and down, 8-3, and they've lost a good Monmouth team, what everybody considers the coach of the year in Alabama, and Indiana, all by single digits. I mean, and all neutral sites. So I can't figure out Mike Bray's team yet. As for the Hoosiers, same as always. Offense great, defense not. If you can hold Notre Dame to 73, I consider that a good win. I think they're going to have a rough time against Kennesaw State tomorrow. Oh, wait, they're not. And then they get Rutgers. Oh, wait, they're not. They're easing into it. I mean, Tim Miles, look out, January 2nd, Nebraska.
Miles would be better off without his team. His players are holding him back.
David, let me throw it over to you then. We mentioned Tim Miles on another conference here. The American, with SMU ineligible, is this now suddenly look like a two-bid league again like it was last year?
Probably. As surprising as this is, I just don't think Frank Haith is going to do it. Poor Frank. But Cincinnati and UConn are looking solid. There's nobody else really in here that, if it's going to be anyone, it's going to be Tulsa. I know you like Houston and have them going to the Sweet 16, but I think it's two. Unless someone else steps up and wins the conference tournament, I think it's two.
Well, let's ask the same question to John S., but not about the American, about the Atlantic 10, which I don't think it's been
doubted. Do you actually like Houston, John? You were nodding your head there.
I do. I understand, it's early and that they're probably not going to do it. They have the Lopes tonight, which is a huge game in Vegas.
That game
13-1 before they head to Cincinnati next month. Like, It's John within the realm of possibility.
John T., if I can give you a little score update, that game has gone 5-0. The Lopes knocked off Houston
78-69. Our Lopes! Our Lopes. Anyway, Houston has beaten Prairie View A&M, Florida A&M, Louisiana Monroe, Grand Valley, and Murray State. If you were to form an all-star team out of those five teams, you might have a top 200 team, maybe.
So American Rising is not going to be trending tonight, but Lopes up and Lopes waiver certainly
will. Yeah. Lopes waiver.
Yes, the Lopes picked up another huge win. They'll get the winner of Wyoming and Marshall tomorrow night. But John S., the Atlantic 10, I don't think it's been a two-bid league as long as I can remember. It's is it a two-bid league this year, though, from what we've seen?
Well, as someone who swallowed the A-10 historically, they've had their up cycles, which seems to be followed pretty quickly by a down cycle. It's not going to be as bad as the 2005 season where GW had the only bid and wound up hitting a double-digit seed, because I do think GW and Dayton are probably going to be locks out of the tournament. But that's it. Davidson did not look impressive at all yesterday against Pittsburgh.
Oh, I get a team that I like.
Well, before we get to David, I know he wants to discuss them, but John T., VCU.
Don't say Fordham.
Is it time to stop discussing beating VCU as being a good victory, which we've kind of been doing so far this year?
It is if you consider them like a top 25 program, because the fact of the matter is they're not. The defense is still solid. They can't shoot this year, 40.5% from the field. The good news is, the bad news for this year is there was only two seniors on the roster, Melvin Johnson and Corey Bilbury, who are also their top two scorers. The future is bright. They have a lot of young talent, I think, but I don't think they're getting anywhere near March this year.
David, I know you want to do it. Go ahead. Talk about them.
Richmond.
Oh, not the way I thought you were going.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. Well, we'll talk about them. I like this Richmond team enough to where I know that, I mean, their losses are bad to Florida. They were right in there with West Virginia, and they sort of lost. But it wouldn't surprise me if they snuck up there. But how about Fordham? Oh, the Fordham Rams. They are doing amazing things. Jeff Neubauer is the coach of the year. Now, granted, we were picking on Houston a little bit. If you took Fairleigh Dickinson, Colgate, Manhattan, St. John's, Central Connecticut, Long Island, Coppin State, and Maine, and Boston College, and tried to come up with an all-star team, it might also fail to finish in the top 200. But that's the thing. Even if Fordham has actually beaten multiple teams in the top 300, they haven't done that in a decade.
You bring up Richmond, but you don't bring up their win at Wake Forest. I'm a little surprised there.
The win at Wake Forest, but even more impressive for Richmond, it was 82-67 over this Northern Iowa team. I think that might be a win we're talking about come March.
I think Richmond could play their way in. I think they're good. Now, again, this is an underexposed league that no one really watches except us, but there's some good teams in this league. Just not as many this year as there have been in the recent year.
John S., as we're recording this, Gonzaga is demolishing Pepperdine in the opening game of West Coast Conference play, but almost lost the game to Tennessee over the weekend in Seattle. Where do you think this Gonzaga team is heading in terms of a seed?
I think right now they would still be in the field as an at-large, but barely. I mean, beating Tennessee on a neutral floor in Seattle does help, and I think it's the game over at UConn that they won in Atlantis that was noteworthy. But other than that, they missed on a couple of decent chances at home against Arizona and UCLA that could have really propped their profile up this year.
Well, they do have one more real interesting non-conference game coming up in mid-February at SMU. That could be a must-win almost if they're going to need an at-large bid if they can't roll through the West Coast Conference.
Well, if they can't roll through the West Coast Conference, then they really have problems.
But John T., let's just mention a few other teams here. Monmouth with the 2-0 week beating Georgetown and beating Rutgers. Now has beaten a Big East team, two Pac-12s, I believe, and a Big Ten team. How good is this team here?
Good. I want to tell you they're going to be an at-large team, but I cannot say. If you lose to Canisius by 10, You're not an at-large team, unfortunately.
Oh, come on. It was one strike. You have to look at the whole body of work. It's not like they lost to Boston College.
Well, it would be explainable if Jim Barrett had some more of his offspring playing for him and Canisius, but I don't think he has any nephews that are still eligible because he's run out of sons.
David, how about this Little Rock team?
I like them a lot, too. I mean, their wins, they don't have the brand names that Monmouth has, but, I mean, they haven't lost yet, and they've beaten a lot of decent teams. I think they can land inside the bubble. I think that they're better than pretty much everyone else in the Sun Belt. Arlington may make them sweat, but if they can finish with just two or three losses, and I think what they've shown us so far that they're good enough to do that, I think they get in. If they beat Texas Tech tomorrow, I think that that's a notable win. I don't like Texas Tech as much as you do. I know you have them in the Sweet 16. But I do think that going on the road and beating a Texas Tech team that probably will hold their own against most of their against most of the conference anyway, that's going to be a decent win for them.
And the funny thing is, out of the Sun Belt, we haven't even mentioned Georgia State all year because we focused all the attention on Texas Arlington and Arkansas Little Rock, and rightfully so, but Georgia State still has some talent remaining from last year's team and Marcus Kreider and Kevin Ware.
Well, and of course, we also got the Missouri Valley Conference. We mentioned this Northern Iowa team now with having the wins over Iowa State and North Carolina. There's another team that I think could definitely be in the at-large bid hunt if they need it. But let's take a quick preview at some of the upcoming games this week. Not very many games because of the Christmas holiday. Christmas holiday, of course, but there are some interesting games coming up tomorrow night, Tuesday the 22nd, actually starting in the afternoon with David. Let me start with this with you. Huge doubleheader in Brooklyn, the Atlantic 10 ACC Showcase. Matech St. Joe's followed by Fordham Boston College.
Yes, I mean, there are showcases, there are conference challenges, and then there's whatever the hell this is. Amazingly, it is not sold out. I can't understand it. You know, when you think of New York, you think Radio City, you think Christmas time, Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, and you think the A-10 ACC Showcase. It's just it's a bucket list thing. Huge games tomorrow. Who's playing again?
we could just go on. But John T., another interesting game tomorrow afternoon. One of your favorite teams, Arizona State, hosting a Stephen F. Austin team that has been underperforming, but it's going to get another shot to try to do something. Do you think Arizona State could be in trouble in this game as a trap game?
As much as I like to think they are, I think that Hurley has things going in the right direction. They have three losses. Kentucky is obviously a good loss. Marquette in overtime, neutral site, decent. Sacramento State, inexcusable, but I think they can rebound against Stephen F. If they were traveling to Texas, I think they'd be in big trouble, but hosting Stephen F., I think they're going to be okay.
Another game coming up here tomorrow. I'm sorry, I just lost my schedule here. The Diamond Head Classic starts tomorrow. The four quarterfinals are Auburn, New Mexico, BYU, Harvard, Oklahoma, Washington State, and Northern Iowa, Hawaii. We kind of like this tournament heading into the year, but David, from what we've seen so far, other than a potential Oklahoma, Northern Iowa semifinal, is there anything even worth watching at Diamond Head?
Northern Iowa, Hawaii. Hawaii is kind of a home court hero. It is kind of a snake pit. They've actually, bitten some people in this tournament before, and Northern Iowa, you know how hungover are they going to be after a huge win against Iowa State? It wouldn't surprise me, because they're such a young team, if they get out there and struggle in this game and then fail to win it. And it is kind of pivotal because these tournaments, those quarterfinal games kind of dictate the kind of competition you're going to be facing the rest of the way. I think that one is kind of big just for that reason.
John S., another big game tomorrow night. Iowa State coming off of that loss and now having to go to Cincinnati. What are your thoughts on this game coming up here?
I got to say, Cincinnati has been quite improved over the past year. This is going to be a very tough test for Iowa State, and this could be a game where, believe it or not, could legitimize Cincinnati as the favorite in the American this year.
And we've discussed already a little bit about the Xavier Wake Forest game tomorrow night, Vanderbilt Purdue. But John T, another Pac-12 team that we didn't discuss tonight. Cal is at Virginia tomorrow night. Do you think Cal's in trouble again, or do you think they've got a shot at this game?
Do I?
They have a shot. It would have been funny if they would have scheduled a noon Eastern tip-off just to see if Cal was awake. But it is a 9 o'clock Eastern start, so they have a chance. They're so young. Only one of their top 8 scorers is a senior. I think Virginia's favored by double digits, and I think they're going to win by double digits.
David, another team, Colorado is sitting here with only one loss. They're playing Penn State tomorrow, so they'll also only have one loss after that. But then potential SMU matchup in the finals of the Las Vegas Classic coming up on Wednesday. Is this Colorado team for real?
I think they are. I really think they are. What the hell is that supposed to mean? The sound effects. Yeah, I think they are for real. They lost their season opener against a pretty good Iowa State team. They played really well in that game, and they haven't lost since. I think I like their chances against Penn State. Well, that doesn't mean they're for real.
How would you like to chance against SMU in the finals, though?
Yeah. That's going to be a really good game, and unfortunately, it really only impacts one of them because SMU is not going anywhere. But that's a big one. And if they get that one, you got to start taking them seriously. You like Texas Tech. I know you like them. I don't know why you like them and not Colorado, but, I mean.
Well, obviously, they're better than Colorado. But John S., Kansas is at San Diego State tomorrow night also in the late game. Potential trap here for the Jayhawks?
Well, San Diego State and the Mountain West need this game in the worst way because the Aztecs have already slipped up against Little Rock and Grand Canyon. They can't afford to lose another game to, even though it's a team like Kansas. Aztecs are going to have to draw the line somewhere. Otherwise, they'll be looking, at best, a double-digit seed out of the Mountain West, even if they win their tournament.
David, I know you want to discuss this one coming up Wednesday night. One of your favorite teams in a huge rivalry game, Missouri, but it's not against Kansas. It's the rivalry with Illinois.
Yes. This game has always been a great atmosphere, split right down the middle. I don't know if it could possibly be less compelling than what it is going to be this Wednesday night.
Well, let's talk
about... You know what? Don't watch it. I don't know. Watch A Christmas Carol or see what else is on.
Well, let's talk about a game that will be compelling. There's no games on Christmas Eve. Christmas Day is going to be the championship round of the Diamond Head. But coming up on Saturday, always one of the best games of the season. And John T., let me throw this over to you here. Louisville and Kentucky, it's the only game coming up on the entire schedule Saturday. Your thoughts on the game this year?
It's going to be fantastic. I had the privilege of interviewing a guy a couple of years ago who made a documentary about the two schools and the rivalry. Fantastic if you can find it. Just the passion and the hatred, like
the blue,
it's a big
red
deal there, obviously. The fun fact for me, there were 16 players in last year's Louisville Kentucky game who played at least 10 minutes in the 8-point win by the Wildcats. Only 4 of the 16 are still around. Onwuaku, Mathiang, Ulis Lee. This is like literally a whole new ball game.
I think it's one of the most bitter. It depends on how you define big, and the fact that it's not a conference game takes a lot of the paper part away from it. At the end of the day, it's just a neutral out of conference game between two likely protected seeds. But this one is bitter. It's got a fascinating history. As far as how it got started and how Kentucky didn't want to play it, and then when they met in the NCAA tournament and how they play now. And it is still just I don't know how else to explain it. There's only two rivalries out there that I think match the bitterness, and neither of them play anymore. One would be Kansas and Missouri, and the other would be West Virginia Pitt. These two teams, at least the fans, I think the players are fine. But as John Titel can attest, these two fan bases hate each other.
Well, why don't we, given how big of a game this is, let's get some predictions on it. David, let me start with you. What do you think happens in this game?
I am actually, at first I didn't think there was any way. I thought Kentucky would go away from it. This game is often a rock fight, and it's often like an ugly played game. But I'm starting to like Louisville, and I guess I just look at their out-of-conference schedule and how amazing it is, and I just think that it's gotten them ready for this. Anyway,
talk about how to win games, right?
Right. Well, Louisville went into Michigan State and led for most of the game and had a chance to win it. And I'm the first person to say you can't come to the table with, you know, a game that you almost won. But I think it does indicate that they are really good and they have blown past everyone else. Louisville did themselves a huge disservice, I think, scheduling as weekly as they did, but they're going to get their chances from this point on, and it starts Saturday, and I think that they can go in there and beat them. I really do.
John S., do you agree?
I still think Kentucky is going to come out on top at home. I'm not going to be too alarmed by their losses to Ohio State and also to UCLA on the road. I mean, it's hard to expect them to win every single game, but it's been a while since Louisville has had consistent success in this rivalry, even in their national championship year, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, you're obviously not a Kentucky fan, because I believe Kentucky fans do expect Kentucky to win every single game. Yeah. John T., your thoughts?
I live close enough.
My thoughts are that I like home court advantage in Rupp Arena, so I'll go with the Wildcats. Louisville just lost so much from last year, which was a tight game that's only an 8-point win by Kentucky. Montrezl Harrell, Terry Rozier, Chris Jones, Wayne Blackshear. That's 47 of the 50 points you scored. Gone. There's just not enough talent there.
I agree. I think that Kentucky takes this game. I think that they're going to be mad coming off of the Ohio State loss, and that's going to even help them even more. But on that note, let's run through any final thoughts here. Stick with you, John T. Any final thoughts for the night?
So I love the history of the game, and they announced today the nominations for the Hall of Fame. Two Big Ten coaches. One recently retired, Bo Ryan, one still kicking butt, Tom Izzo. I think they're both deserving, and I hope they both get in, and it's amazing. I mean, I love Sean Miller, who's made zero Final Fours. Izzo's made seven Final Fours. He is a Hall of Famer.
Well, I can't disagree at all with that. I think Izzo absolutely belongs in. John S., any final thoughts from you?
I think I just wanted to go back to the Skip Prosser Classic that we had discussed earlier. I mean, with all the success that Xavier's had recently and even with some of the success that Wake Forest has had this year, both programs can at least share a common bond in Skip Prosser and how personable he was for both fan bases. And although he was a coach, he was also a high school history teacher. Be looking to see how this game goes tomorrow night.
David, your thoughts?
I normally don't get sentimental, but this time of year, the holiday season, I think it's important to remember what's really important, and what's really important is college basketball. So let's just take some time over this holiday season to think about that and remember that. And the other thing that's important to remember is kind of what happened 30 years ago that it's kind of overlooked, and it's just amazing how quickly we forget what a different world we lived in. But 30 years ago to the year on Christmas Day is when Rocky Balboa won the Cold War all by himself by defeating Ivan, whatever his name was. So, two very important things to remember, just college basketball and how Rocky won the Cold War.
Okay, well, we do want to give thanks to Rocky for all that he did for us 30 years ago. Yes. But I do want to, it's my final thought, wish everybody out there a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holidays. And I know a lot of people out there with family this year. Be safe. Enjoy yourselves. And we'll be talking to you again. We'll be coming up with an Under the Radar in a couple nights. We'll be back next week before New Year's with another Hoops HD report. So have a great night, everybody. We'll
talk to you again real soon. I would not do.
If David would do it, don't do it. Okay. Have a good night.